I want to look at the topic of singing this morning. Just as a quick little background on myself, I'm not musically inclined. Those that sit by me in services and hear me sing can tell you that. When I was in middle school, they forced you into either taking choir, band, or orchestra. Band was just too hard. You had to march, you had to be at concert. Choir was out because of my singing. So I was kind of forced into taking orchestra. And I played the cello, which for those that don't know, it's the big one that you sit down and you strum it up here and you play down here, you sit. Didn't want to play the violin. Sarah played that. Seemed like a girly musical instrument. So, but I was so bad at cello that the kid, what they do if you don't know orchestra, you have contests and you all play the same piece of music and the very best sits at the first seat and you go all the way back to the very last kid who's the worst. And then you go to the concert, and you got, and everyone goes, "Oh, there's the best," and "Oh, that guy's the worst." I was the worst, and this is no joke. The kid that sat beside me, that was the second worst, always missed school. I don't know what was going on with him. He had some parental issues, but he only came to class like half the time. So I was so bad, and I never missed class that I sat behind this kid. So my musical inclination is just poor. I'll blame my mom. She's here. I have bad musical genes. Don't let that affect you if you sit by Andrew and Sarah. They're a little bit better at it than I am. But I say all that, and we'll get more into it later, to just say that, you know, I don't lead singing. When I first moved here, I did. And I'll get into later why I choose not to anymore. I took my best friend in high school. He dragged me one summer to a singing school in Oklahoma. And it's led by R.J. Stevens, who I believe is the one that put the songbook We Sing together. And if you don't know R.J. is a powerful singer. He gets up in front of large auditoriums, and he can lead it with just his voice. And it's led by him and his son Tim and some others. And so my friend dragged me there, and I became a competent song leader, enough where I could, I learned how to beat music, beat the time. I learned, you know, how to hear the pitch just enough that I could get up and competently lead a song. And I'll get into later why I don't lead singing in any longer. But the thing about singing, let's just go ahead and get into it. In Colossians 3:16, I'm not going to use a lot of verses this morning because we just don't have a lot of verses when it comes to singing. But let the word of Christ, tells us in Colossians 3:16, dwell in you richly in all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another in psalms, hymns, spiritual songs, singing with grace in your hearts to the Lord. So the first thing we notice about singing is it's a command for the body of Christ. If you turn over there with me to Colossians chapter 3, we read verse 16. But if you start back up before, it says, therefore as the elect of God in verse 12, so it's talking to the elect of God, holy and beloved, put on tender mercies, kindness, humility, meekness, long-suffering, bearing with one another, forgiving one another. If anyone has a complaint against another, even as Christ forgave you, so you also must do. But above all these things, put on love, which is the bond of perfection. And let the peace of God rule in your hearts, to which also you were called, again, in one body. And be thankful. And then it goes into the verse there that we see, admonishing and teaching one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing with grace in your hearts to the Lord. So it's a command for the body of Christ. And so if we do kind of an FAQ, frequently asked questions, who is to sing? Well, we notice right off the bat from this, all are to sing. This does not allow for the practice of choirs or solo performers. Again, the idea being, hey, we only want those that are really well-versed in singing. They have good voices. They know how to keep up with the beat of the conductor and all that. We want to hear them because we don't want to hear Aaron. And so, again, we're not here to be entertained ourselves, and so we all are to sing. And so, what about instruments? And I'm not going to touch on this a lot. I do want to bring it up, and then we'll get into the meat of the lesson here in a minute. I touched on this not too long ago, but it does bear mentioning again. The command is simply to use voices to sing, speaking to one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody in your heart to the Lord. That's found over in Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 19. And these are the crux of the two verses that we typically turn to talk about singing and how we are to sing in worship services to the Lord. And then some might ask, well, what about the use of pitch pipes? You know, if we're not going to be able to play a musical instrument, you know, some choose to blow a pitch pipe before the song to get the correct pitch to then lead the song. So what about the use of a pitch pipe? Well, the use of a pitch pipe is what we refer to, or is commonly referred to, as an expediency. And this is something that helps us fulfill the commands that God has given us. And so when we're looking at things that are expediencies, we have to make sure, and pitch pipe being one of those things, if we're going to call a pitch pipe an expediency, and we're not going to call a piano that's played during the song of an expediency, or another musical instrument played during the singing of the song, that can't be an expediency. Well, why not? And it's a valid question. So the first thing for something to be an expediency, we see that it has to be lawful. So, when we look at singing, we see these verses over in Colossians, we see these verses over in Ephesians, we're told to sing, that we're all to sing. And so we can't change the law. So the expediency can't change the law. So choirs or solo performers would seem to be an expediency, right? It's better. It's easier. It helps us fulfill the command. Well, does it? Well, no, because the command is for us all to sing. So it takes away from the command. It changes the command. So it can no longer be an expediency because those things are unlawful. So the first thing is, to be an expediency, it needs to be lawful. The second thing is, it must not be specified. So in other words, an expediency indicates a choice. And so where God has not given us a choice, we cannot make one. Singing is not a choice. We have to sing. Singing is what has to be done. So going back to the idea of it being lawful and it not being and it being specified, singing is what's specified. We can't change the law by then adding in instruments of music because singing is what is specified. So must be lawful, must not be specified. It must edify. So we should not let a matter of choice become a division over in 1 Corinthians chapter 10. In verse 23, Paul had written to the Corinthian brethren and tells them, all things are lawful for me, but not all things are helpful. All things are lawful for me, but not all things edify. Let not one seek his own, but each one the other's well-being. So it has to edify. If it's something that is not building us all up, if it's not edifying us, then we shouldn't practice it. And that goes hand in hand kind of with the last one, is that it shouldn't offend a brother's conscience. So if I were to blow a pitch pipe before I lead the song, it would not affect my conscience. I think that I understand that the person is getting the pitch to then lead the song, that is not an instrument of music that is changing the command there to sing. It's not it's not taking away from the specification, which is to sing. But if someone feels that way and they were to come up to me and say afterwards and say, hey, Aaron, you know, really you violated my conscience when you blew the pitch pipe, then we should be willing to do away with the pitch pipe. And in fact, you know, and you could get, there's a lot of discussions that can get into with, especially when we're talking about violating brothers' consciences. But in fact, if we were to say, have a piano over here in the corner and we hit the key to get the pitch and then we play it, you know, then that, in my estimation, that's what we're using it for. Now, I can understand and see that people start coming in and they see the piano and they say, well, they're just like everybody else. They have a piano. So I can see that. But my point that I'm trying to make is, the point that I'm trying to make, follow me here, is that we're blowing something to get the pitch and then we're using it. So if that's going to violate a brother's conscience, just like a piano would probably violate many people's conscience, then we should be able to say, okay, I understand that. Let's get rid of the pitch pipes. Let's not use it. I understand now people have it on their phone, they hit it, and they go from that. So we should be willing, if someone comes up to us and says, you know, you hit the phone, you hit a pitch pipe, you heard this, I heard a musical note, and that violated my conscience, we should be willing to say, I do not want you to stumble, and turn over to Romans 14 to get that idea. Romans 14, verse 21. If we're causing our brothers to stumble, then we need to do away with it. It is good neither to eat meat, nor drink wine, nor do anything by which your brother stumbles or offended, or is made weak. So we should be willing to do away with those things that would cause our brothers to stumble. So when we're looking at things that are expediencies, and regards to this, and a lot of people bring up the argument when you say, when you're talking about instruments of music, you say, the Bible specifies singing, we have to sing, we can't use musical instruments. A lot of times people say, well, what about pitch pipes? What about things that get the note? If it affects our consciences, then we need to be able to be willing to do away with it. But other expediencies are used all the time. The songbook in and of itself is an expediency. We can also project the songs on the overhead projector. Maybe you've been at congregations that have purchased the software that project it up. Sometimes, you know, I've heard in areas where either songbooks cannot be afforded, maybe parts of the world where people are not as literate as we are, and so many of the people that meet there cannot read. The song leader will actually begin the song and say the first how many ever, and then it will be repeated back. So the point being is that these all, the things that we have that are really conveniences, and you know, we're sitting in a very air-conditioned building. You know, it's warm outside. If there was no heat in here, I'd be profusely sweating right now. So, you know, these are all conveniences that are expediencies. This very building is an expediency that leads us to be able to fulfill the command to sing. And I understand the building fulfills other commands other than just singing. But songbooks, however we would choose to be able to be on the same page as to what we are singing, fulfills those commands, helps us to fulfill the commands in our expediencies in regards to that. And then the other part of that is that we have song leaders to also be an expediency to fulfill the idea of being all things being done decently in order. And that's over in 1 Corinthians chapter 14. 1 Corinthians chapter 14 and verse 40 here. The Corinthian brethren had a lot of different issues. And Paul addressed a lot of those issues. And he tells them at one point, he says to them, right here he says, let all things be done decently and in order. Here, if you go back up and start in verse 26 and on down, they were talking over each other, it seems. They were speaking in tongues two or three at a time. There was no interpreter sometimes, so someone's up there speaking in tongues and no one can understand because there's no one to interpret. And they just were not doing things decently and in order. So we have song leaders to lead the songs, as Bill was doing just a moment ago, so that we know what song we're all singing. We could all come in here and just all start singing different songs. That wouldn't be done decently in order. So we know what songs we're to sing. We have songbooks so that we can turn to it. I'll be on the same page with what song we're singing. And again, if we wanted to project over the overhead or something, those are all in of itself expediencies. So that all things would be done decently in order. So what's the purpose of singing? Well, the purpose of singing, if you go back over to our verses over in Ephesians and Colossians, is to teach and admonish. And I feel like, and I'm really talking to myself, but I feel like if I probably have this this issue, then a lot of us probably do, or some. You know, to teach and admonish, warn or reprimand someone firmly, advise or urge earnestly. And I feel like what happens a lot of times is we come in the building, the song leader gets up, you know, maybe he's haphazardly, and we'll get into some of these things here in just a moment, picked out some songs, turned to number 384, and we start to sing the song, and I go, after about five words, you know, and I'm fumbling with the kids or something, I go, hey, I know this song, I have it memorized, and I sing it, and I don't even think one time about what a single word says. It's just coming out of my mouth, because I happen to know it, because I've been singing many of these songs since the time I was young enough to barely be able to walk. I've been hearing them sung. And so, really, when we're bringing it down, the purpose of singing is to teach and admonish. And admonish is to warn, reprimand someone. It's to advise or urge earnestly. Singing is something that we need to be taking as a serious part of worshipful activity to the Lord. And so it's not something that is to be done haphazardly. It's not something that is to be done without thought process. It's not something that we just do because we've done it all the time that same way, and I happen to know the song, and I can come out with it and move on to the next one. It's to be taken serious. It's a part of worshipful activity to the Lord. If you look back over in our verse over there in Colossians chapter 3, it says, singing with grace in your hearts to who? To the Lord. It's not for man-pleasing. It's not for my pleasing. It's not what I want to do or about me. It's about doing it to the Lord. And in and of that, then I'm helping teach and admonish each and every one of us that are in here as we do that. So I want to touch now on some song leaders' responsibilities in this. Taking into account all the things that we've looked at here, that we've talked about, what are our responsibilities as song leaders and then also as audience members when we're setting out to sing? And I think the first one we just talked about a little bit is to prepare beforehand. As I get up here to preach, and I actually mentioned two or three sermons ago, that there were times I used to preach that I was woefully unprepared. And that's wrong. And I think we would all agree and all acknowledge that if someone gets up to preach, they should be prepared. You're going to talk for a certain amount of time. You should be not wasting the audience's time by being unprepared with your thoughts and what you want to say. Because we're here together to learn about the Lord, to edify one another, to build each other up, to be reminded of things that maybe we've forgotten, to learn new things that maybe we haven't seen before. And so it's a serious activity. It's a serious task. And so we don't just haphazardly come in the building on Sunday morning and say, okay, this morning, over here you'll preach and over here you'll preach. Hope you can say something relevant and worth saying. We don't do that. We have the assignment sheet printed out, try to print it out well in advance so that people can be ready to preach and have their thought processes in line. But I feel, and again I'm talking to myself with this, I feel that the other activities we kind of do that with. We show up and, okay, you got first prayer. Oh yeah, I'd forgotten. I know I got the email. I know I had the assignment sheet, but I've forgotten. You know, okay, got Lord's Supper, heading the Lord's Supper. Ooh, forgot I had that. Let me hurry up and find a verse to turn to. Let me think about what I might say. You know, you got song leading. Ooh, okay. So I got to prepare three songs before the sermon. And then an invitation song, and if I have the second part, then I got to also add a Lord's Supper song, and we're not prepared beforehand. And sometimes this can't be done. This morning is a prime example. I was joking with Bill about it because he was about to lead singing, and Brian has some stuff going on here, and so he asked Bill if he would lead singing. And I was like, oh, kind of a bad morning to just be going haphazardly choosing out four or five songs. So, you know, sometimes it can't be helped. And I understand and I know that Bill, who's an extremely competent song leader and knows many, many, many songs, had no problem leading us in the songs to the point that no one would know that he hadn't had 2 weeks to prepare. But it goes beyond just being able to beat the time of the music, getting the pitch correctly, and knowing the songs. It goes into thoughts of picking songs that make sense together, have a theme. Remember that singing is to teach and admonish. So when we get up and, you know, the song leader is able to say, I picked out songs this morning that goes to this. It puts us all in a better mindset for the worship. When I went to that singing school, they really, really harped on not being a song leader, but they used a catchphrase, being a worship leader. They said it's the song leader who's usually the first to get up, and you know, you have introductory comments in the prayer and things like that. I understand that. But the song leader, they said, sets the tone for the worship. They said, pick out songs that make sense together. Don't sing four really slow, you know, arduous songs that are hard to get into and kind of perhaps drag the audience down. But pick out some uplifting songs, and then maybe you have a slower song. You know, and their point and what they were trying to say is, and the point they're trying to get across, is to think beforehand about what you're going to be doing. To have perhaps a theme, to have songs that have different beat rhythms to them, and so that the way the audience can get into the worship. Another thought, have ready scriptural songs. Keep this in mind. The songbooks that we use, and I know we have two or three that sometimes we use and things like that, but all these songs in here have been written by man. I know there are some that come straight from Psalm sometimes. But for the most part, the songs in this book and the others have been written by man, and they've also been taken by man and put in these books. So just flipping to a song and saying, oh, you know, This song's in the songbook. It must be scriptural. God wouldn't allow it to be in our songbook if it wasn't scriptural. Well, God didn't put it in the songbook. A man did. And so we need to have ready scriptural songs. And then it is the song leader's responsibility to set the pitch and pace of the song. I stopped at one point when we handed out assignment sheets to reclassify what you would like to do. You know, we had some newer members, and we just decided to do it for everybody. I went ahead and took myself out of the song leading rotation, and I did it for a reason. I did it because invariably, every time I would lead singing, at least one or two of the songs I would lead, someone in the audience was actually leading it. Because I don't have the ability. I really didn't. You know, I became competent enough that I could kind of start the song, but at some point, someone in the audience would get the correct pitch because my pitch was wrong. And so what was I doing? What I was doing was I was causing a distraction to the audience. Because instead of focusing on the words of the song, whatever song it may be, you know, okay, you know, the people were focused on the pitch of the song. Oh, Aaron's got the wrong pitch. Let me try to help him out by getting him on the correct pitch. Maybe I was setting the song too slow or too fast, and someone's voice would come over my own, and I would go, okay, I hear it now, and then I'd pick up on it. So not only was I distracting them, but I was distracting myself to the point that the words of the song were, in my opinion, secondary. And because of that, I needed to pull back from songwriting. So that's why I did. And I'm only saying that for myself. I'm not saying that for anybody else. Another thing, too, is many of the members that have moved here in the last few years are much more competent song leaders than myself. We have excellent song leaders. And so it really wasn't necessary for me anymore on that point either, because we had more men who were capable and willing and able to. So what is the audience's responsibility, right? The audience isn't just removed from this. Oh, it's all on the song leader. You know, it's all on that worship leader up there. He's got to do it all. He's got to pick out those songs. And he's got to set the pitch and the tone and all that. And all I have to do is, I'm kind of mumbling to myself as I'm singing the song. No, it's to sing. It's to sing where you can be heard, right? Hey, listen. Again, you know, I can't sing, and I'm not about to get up here, you know, it wouldn't be appropriate in the same, but let's just say we go to someone's house or whatever, and they're like, hey, Aaron, you're an amazing singer, get up here and sing a song, you know, American Idol style or something like that. Absolutely not. I'd be one of those ones they put on there and make fun of. So when I say to sing where you can be heard, I mean it. I'm not saying the whole auditorium hear you, but those around me can hear me sing, because it's a command of God to sing, and it's not for me. Again, it's not. And it's not for Wanda and Larry who sit in front of me and Jesse and Samantha who sit in front of me. You know, it's for the Lord. So our responsibility, first and foremost, is to sing where you can be heard. Not mumbling the words or barely mouthing them, but to sing where you can be heard. And why? Well, again, it goes back to sing in order to teach and admonish. This means paying attention to the words of the song. Not just merely singing because I really like to sing. You know, I really enjoy singing. So I want to be there every time we sing, and I want to go to these singings and things like that because I really like to sing and I'm really good at it and I want people to hear my voice. No, the point is that the words have meaning. The words have meaning for us to teach and admonish. The focus should not be on the perfect pitch or how amazing it sounds, but rather on what do the words teach us. So even when we find ourselves in situations where and it happens to every song leader, I'm sure it's even happened to R.J. Stevens. He's gotten up and he stumbled over a song. Even when that happens, we shouldn't go, oh, this sounds terrible. You know, this isn't the right pitch at all. You know, I remember my friend I was telling you about who dragged me. And he could sing. He was in all the musical plays at school. He did, I'll never forget The Fiddler on the Roof. He was the lead. I can't remember the guy's name. Tevye. Anyway, he was a sophomore in high school. It was incredible. But the older he got, and the more musical ability he obtained, the more it bugged him, the song leaders at services. He used to just, oh, that guy shouldn't be leading singing. I'd be like, why not? Oh, he can't lead singing. He can't keep the pitch. He can't. It sounds awful. He would sit there, cover his ears sometimes. Is that the right attitude to have? No. So the absolute wrong attitude to have. And this one's for me as well. Singing time is not time to remember, oh, I forgot to write my check for the contribution. I have to go to the restroom now. Now, I was, again, telling myself here, I was in the bathroom while Bill led the first two songs because I did have to go to the bathroom. So, again, these things, and I brought this up in my last sermon. Again, there's always times that, you know, but the point is, every single time, oh, the singing, I can't stand it. I'm going to the restroom. I got to get away from this. I really don't like to sing. I don't want to sing. I don't want to hear this singing. I don't want to be a part of this. Is that our attitude? Remember, you're singing to the Lord. And why? Because it teaches and admonishes us. There's some amazing songs. I'm sure we all have our favorites. I didn't necessarily pick out my favorites. But it teaches us about Christ and what He did for us at Calvary. At Calvary is one of my favorites. Verse number 53, years I spent in vanity and pride. That describes most of us before we were baptized, right? Caring not my Lord was crucified, knowing not it was for me He died on Calvary. By God's word, last my sin I learned now. I trembled at the law at spur until my guilty soul imploring turned to Calvary. Now I've given to Jesus everything. Now I gladly own Him as my King. Now my raptured soul can only sing of Calvary. Oh, the love that drew salvation's plan. Oh, the grace that brought down to man. Oh, the mighty gulf that God did span at Calvary. Mercy there was great, and grace was free. Pardon there was multiplied to me. There my burden soul found liberty at Calvary. When we sing that, I had that song memorized. If any of our song leaders got up here, I could sing it and not even think one time about what one single word meant. But how powerful of a song is that, really? Stop and think about that for a minute. Years I spent in vanity and pride. It's reminding us of what we used to be. Carry not my Lord was crucified. And hopefully what we're not anymore. And then it goes on. When we all get to heaven, number 756, reminding us about our striving for that heavenly home. When we all get to heaven, it says in the chorus, what a day of rejoicing that will be. When we all see Jesus, we'll sing and shout the victory. There's many, many, many powerful songs. And I was thinking about this the other day because there was a particular song, and now I've forgotten it. But I was sitting, it's been probably actually a month ago now, and I'm sitting there and I'm singing it, and I know I'm not paying attention to the words. And it's just flowing out of my mouth because I know the song. And halfway through, the song was actually, and I should have wrote it down to remember, the song was actually about singing to pay attention, basically, was one of the verses. And I'm like, I had like an aha moment, like, oh, you know, I need to be paying attention. And then I started developing this sermon. Number 85, we're going to sing that. Let's turn to that. Number 85, and then we'll let Bill sing it, or lead it for us, and we'll all sing. Singing, you know, about accepting the gospel call. Buried with Christ, my blessed Redeemer, dead to the old life of fallen sin, Satan may call, the world may entreat me. There is no voice that answers within. Can we say that? Can we say that we've been buried with Christ? That He is our blessed Redeemer? That we've put aside that old life that is dead to us? That Satan may call, the world may entreat, but it doesn't have any hold on us anymore. Think it not strange that things I once cherished cannot allure me or charm as before. For in the flesh with Christ I've suffered. All things are past. I love them no more. Again, can we say those things? Can we say that those things that we used to engage in, those sinful things that we did, that we put aside ourselves and we put on Christ? Dead unto sin, alive through the Spirit, rising with Him from the gloom of the grave. All things are new, and I am rejoicing in His great love, His power to save. Dead to the world, sin hath no more its cruel dominion. Walking in newness or of life, I am free. Glorious life of Christ my Redeemer, which He so richly shareth with me. Dead to the world, to voices that call me. Living anew, obedient but free. Dead to the joys that once did enthrall me. Yet 'tis not I, Christ liveth in me. Hopefully we can all say that. If you can't say that, then you're not in a correct relationship with God, with Christ. You need to make that right. Make it right now while we still have breath in us as we stand and sing.